come, they told me, ba da ba bam bam. A newborn king to see, ba da ba bum 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 bum. Our finest gifts we bring, yeah, to lay before the king, ba da ba bum 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 bum. So to honor him, ba da ba bum bum. When we come.
Our storytellers for Godly Play share a story. This is actually the very first story in the Godly Play series that our children experience, and we come back to it most every fall. We keep a calendar. This is the Our kids know this, but our adults might not all be aware. This is the calendar of the church year. I'm holding it upside down. But this is the calendar of the church year, and you see it up here. And this is a story called The Circle of the Church Year. And so I'm going to invite us to just hear a little bit of how that story begins for our children, and then I'm hoping they might be able to help me find some things in this story. The story of The Circle of the Church Year begins like this. Time. There are so many different kinds of time. There's a time to go to bed. That one sometimes comes too early. There's a time to get up in the morning, time to go to school. There's a time to go to work. There's a time to just play. And it just keeps making me wonder, though, like, what is time? What really is time? And some people say that time is in a line. And so it might look something like this. So time in a line looks like this. This is the very beginning of it. It's brand new. But now look what happens as time in a line keeps going. This part that used to be new, that was first born, is now getting older. And this other part is the new part. And so we have a beginning that's getting older, or a beginning that's kind of like an ending, and an ending, the right part right here, that's the newest part. We have an ending that's like a beginning that's like an ending, but how long does time go on? So the church took this beginning that's like an ending, and this ending that's like a beginning, and they tied them together so that we would always remember that at every ending, we have a new beginning. And every beginning as well is in a form an ending. They tied this together and they created our entire year together. So are any of the young people here able to help me figure out, or help our adults, where are we up there? Can anybody help us figure out where on the calendar of the year are we? Does anybody, maybe Julian knows, or Eleanor? We're going to have shy ones among us. Julian, are you able, can you see up there to figure out where we might be? Do you remember where we are? We're in Christmas. You're exactly right. So you see up here at the top, there are four purple blocks. Each of those represents a Sunday. So this calendar of the church year, each block represents a week or a Sunday. And the church year actually begins with those four purple ones at the very top. And we get ready for the mystery and the power and the beauty of Christmas for 4 weeks. And then most often, not always, but most often, there are two Sundays in Christmas. The people around us, maybe some of us too, tend to throw our Christmas tree out, often the day after Christmas Day. But the church has always said that the power and the mystery of Christmas is so big that we need to live into it for 12 days. And so what happens is this year we have two Sundays that are happening in Christmas, and this is one of those that we gather on in this day. The global church takes this calendar And every 3 years, we read through Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and then we intersperse John in the middle of that. We call it a lectionary, and oftentimes, not always, we most often don't do well with rules here or structure in those ways, but we kind of keep it as a base, the lectionary. It holds us, and it guides us as we go. And so this year, it so happens, and it was really striking for us, that the first Sunday in Christmas, this morning, reading is actually from Matthew 2, but the calendar of the church year also has a reading for January 1 or for New Year's Day, and that comes from the end of Matthew 25. So here we are on this very Sunday with two prescribed readings, one from the beginning of Matthew, a beginning that's kind of like an ending, and one from the ending of Matthew, an ending that's kind of like a beginning. And this morning, I hope that we can invite all of us to live together in both of those stories just a little bit. So the first reading in Matthew 2, we find here that Jesus is an infant. And at the end of this, the reading for New Year's Day from Matthew 25, is Jesus talking to his followers just before his ending that becomes the resurrection and a new beginning. So it's helpful actually to step back even for another step. And so I want to invite us to do that for just a moment. Matthew's gospel as a whole, it's helpful to understand just a little bit of the historical context of it. So Matthew is writing to a people who remember Moses as the critical leader in their people's lives. The people of God, the Israelites, were enslaved in Egypt. And Moses led them to freedom. And so when Matthew is writing generations later, he is wanting the people he's writing to see Jesus as a new Moses, as a new leader who's going to lead the people from enslavement to freedom. This is the context that Matthew is writing in. So Moses led God's people to freedom, and Matthew's longing is for us to see that Jesus is following in those ways as the new one. And so I want to take us through together just a little bit of this reading from Matthew 2, and it starts at verse 13. Now after they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet. So again, Matthew is trying to help the people see that Jesus is coming into this as the embodiment of what came before them. "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise ones, they had just left. We heard Omari sing the song of the little drummer boy. The wise ones had just left at this moment. Herod was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing in loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more. When Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who are seeking the child's life are dead." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he had heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled. He will be called a Nazarene. So according to Matthew, Jesus starts his childhood as a refugee. They flee from Judea to Egypt, and then briefly from Egypt to Judea, and then from Judea to Galilee. The infant Jesus has nowhere to lay his head from the very day that he is born. And this is a Chinese-American contemporary painter, Hei Ki, who's in Southern California now. And this is his depiction of the Holy Family as a refugee family. The previous chapter, as I mentioned when we were reading, has the wise ones bringing gold and frankincense and myrrh. It's this image right here of the wise ones coming together to offer gifts. And Omari's little drummer boy captures the feel of these outsiders, foreigners, these people who are other, are the first to come and pay tribute to God being born into the world in the form of Jesus. And just within a few lines, Matthew moves us from the little drummer boy to the horrors of a family that is displaced from its homeland. The intensity of the shift is a harsh reminder, it seems to me, of the struggle in every generation. This is from the New York Times just a few weeks ago. That we are capable of both a passionate desire to reach in love and to give generously, and we are also painfully capable of turning our backs on grace as we witness systems of violence and we fail to summon the courage or the knowledge or the wherewithal to respond to the repression that is literally slaughtering innocent ones in our day. The Holy Family is a refugee family in Matthew's gospel. And it seems to me then that one of our challenges today is to notice where the Holy Family might be coming into our lives through the refugees that are in our day as well. The assigned reading for the end of Matthew's gospel from Matthew 25 invites us and into a deeper reflection, I think, on what this might actually look like in our everyday lives. So we go from the beginning that is like an ending of the family, the Holy Family, becoming a refugee family, to the end of Matthew as Jesus is sharing with his disciples as he's probably aware, imminently aware, that he has spoken such harsh truth to the powers that be that his life will not continue for long. And so he offers this wisdom and guidance to those that are closest to him. Matthew 25 says it this way. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him. And he'll separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he'll put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. Then the righteous will answer, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. And then he will say to those at his left hand, you that are accursed, depart from me into this eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you didn't welcome me. Naked and you didn't clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. And then they also will answer, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? And he'll answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did not do to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. I want to acknowledge that this is a harsh ending that Jesus has. And there are many people who hear and see this image of separating sheep and goats And we don't necessarily read it as a shepherd does of how we separate these out because they are different, but we read it in our own context, in our own way. And we get really caught up in our own sense that, wow, I think I'm a sheep. So I'm going to point out all the goats. We walked out of worship a couple of weeks ago, and we had a person who was pretty confident that he was the sheep. And he had a very large sign to tell all of us that we are all the goats. He was very certain that this was the case. He had a megaphone, just in case you couldn't read the words, you could hear him say it. And the words were written large, so even folks that are might need glasses to see afar were probably able to see what was on the sign. And if you didn't hit 1 and 2, you definitely were going to be in trouble by 3, 4, and 5. And we tend to get caught in a cycle of seeing ourselves in the sheep and then pointing out all the goats around us, pronouncing everyone around us in that way. It even happens to folks in this very room, to me, where I get caught in this cycle as well, where I start to, in more subtle ways, I don't always have a megaphone and a big sign, but I get caught in the same thing. Sometimes it probably feels like I have a megaphone, huh? For those that live with me. And when we do, I think we miss the point entirely of this dysfunctional cycle. And I want to invite you to notice in the story that Jesus shares that the people he lifts up as sheep, they have absolutely no idea what he's talking about. They're like, wait, when did we do that? Well, you fed me when I was hungry. You gave me water when I was thirsty. You visited me when I was in prison. And they're like, I don't know. You sure? He is telling them, and they have no idea. No idea that they've been reaching in love. They ask, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food and thirsty and gave you something to drink? It turns out that doesn't go on a sign, though, quite as well. Like, who would Jesus condemn fits on a sign perfectly. But, like, I don't know if I'm reaching in love. Like, we don't usually put that on a sign or run around with a megaphone. But it seems that Jesus invites us into that unknown and that invitation to risk vulnerability and relationship with others without real clarity that we're going to get it all right or always know when we're even doing it. And that's the story that Jesus shares. We might feel lost and wandering at moments in our own lives, but God is going to stay with us in that and then try to help us by pointing out when we're not even aware of when we've been doing it. We prayed over this text in a weekly prayer gathering on Thursday, and one of the people in the room, in our circle, lifted up that Jesus is saying to the folks here, whenever you did it to one of the least of these, one of the least of these. And this feels critical for me, and I hope it might for you as well, not to allow ourselves in the particularity of this moment, to get lost in the enormity of our world's challenges, but to simply focus on one opportunity that's right before us. Because the truth of the matter is that changing the world in these ways is going to begin and end, and beginning that's like an ending that's like a beginning, when we call our attention to the one that's right before us. It happened for me this way. During Winter Sanctuary, we were, some people might wonder, why does this church have random stuff hanging all over the place? It's a good question. Sometimes I wonder why we have random stuff. We did a worship series to get ready for Christmas called Take Me to the Alley, and we created an alley scene in here. And in a sense, we were getting ready to welcome 100 unhoused guests to this space. And when the folks actually arrived, one woman came to me, and she asked me if the stuff that's hanging in the sanctuary, has it been claimed? And I wasn't sure what she was talking about. And she said, well, I have a son who just had a child, and I'd like to give my grandchild a gift. And I thought, ugh. And I think that God meets us in those moments, those challenges, to look at ourselves and to be attentive to the one that's right before us, and to try to reach in love, to try to just hold the moment of grace rather than turning our backs. And it begins, and maybe it ends, with the one that's right before us, that's weary, lost, lonely, and searching. And it seems to me that when we fail to stay present with that one, as I often do, that that's when we find ourselves in what feels like an eternal punishment. That's what it means for me when the end of this text goes to the ones who are goats find themselves in eternal punishment. That's what I find myself in over and over when I turn my back on that one right who I'm called to love. And so what if our New Year's resolutions are less about lists of personal goals for our bodies or for how we're going to spend our time, and they're more about reaching in love to the one that is right before us, the one that is weary, lost, and lonely. Last Lent, getting ready for Easter, if you remember the cycle, circle of the church year, we have a season to get ready for Easter, and we spent time in faces of people in this community, and one of those that we closed with is the face of a man named Oscar Romero, who was archbishop in El Salvador in the rise of a military dictatorship in that space, and then who led the people of El Salvador in resistance to that movement. He didn't always live this way. He was a guy that I imagine with glasses and a huge library because he spent most of his time in his books, but he found himself broken open by his version of a woman standing in front of him saying, "The stuff you guys are using to help you get ready for worship, I want to give that as a gift to my new grandchild." And that took him to such a place that he said, "I want to be in this together with the people." And like Jesus, he spoke truth to power in such a way that his life was taken. And as his life was taken in March 24th of 1980, folks around the world gathered to remember him. And one person, Bishop Ken Untner, drafted this, and I want to share these words with you as we move toward closing. It's called "The Future Not Our Own." It helps now and then to step back and take a long view. The kingdom is not only beyond our efforts, it's beyond our vision. We accomplish in our lifetime only a fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. Nothing we do is complete, which is another way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. No statement says all that could be said. No prayer fully expresses our faith. No confession brings perfection. No pastoral visit brings wholeness. No program, no winter sanctuary or refugee welcome accomplishes the church's mission. No set of goals and objectives includes everything. And this is what we are about. We plant the seeds that one day will grow. We water the seeds already planted, knowing that they hold future promise. We lay foundations that will need further development. We provide yeast that produces effects far beyond our capabilities. We cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing this. This enables us to do something and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter and do the rest. We may never see the end results, but that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders, ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future not our own. The circle of the church year has an end that is like a beginning and a beginning that is like an end. And as we end the year of 2016 and step into 2017, it may help us as well to take a step back and to see the long view, to wonder about the seeds that we plant, the seeds that we water, the yeast that we have to offer. And I invite us to wonder who that one person might be that we are called right now to reach in love to. Our church community has welcomed one family of four from Iraq in just these last 2 months. We've learned a great deal, and we know that we have even more to learn as we continue to journey with them and to reach to new families. We'll welcome one more refugee family, a holy family indeed, in the coming weeks. And maybe a seed will be planted in some of you to reach in love to that holy family that is right now waking up in a refugee camp and in just a few days will be on an airplane to a place that they can't yet imagine. Maybe some of you are feeling tired and a little bit inspired because you've spent a week here or even just a little bit of time here this week welcoming unhoused adults. And maybe some of us are going to plant some seeds and water seeds that were planted as we realized here in this space that when we gather together chronically unhoused adults with newly unhoused teenagers, many of whom are struggling around issues of gender identity and sexual orientation, that it is sometimes like oil and water to bring everybody together in one space. And God might actually need us to figure out how to do this a little bit differently in the years ahead so that our hospitality can be a little bit more radical and a little bit, or a lot, I hope, more welcoming in that space. And maybe some among us are going to feel called to try to figure out what does that actually look like? Because we could wait for Mayor Steinberg and others to do it, or we could step into the new year together. It is a gift to be together, longing with you all to follow a light this day. And we look back on a holy family that themselves became refugees, that looked up into the night sky to find their way toward safety. And then God calls us to see those refugees in our day, in every day, and to make space for one another. This indeed is what the work of Christmas looks like. It is what this new year has to offer us. And so may we all acknowledge that we fall short of everything in every way that God calls us to be. But God is going to keep holding us in grace and inviting us to take that next step with the one that is right before us. I'm going to invite us to pray these words together. And then our music team is going to help us prepare our hearts and minds to come to the table. And so I invite us to share together these words aloud. God with us. We can't do everything. And there is a sense of liberation in realizing this. Our capacities are limited. And too often we turn from grace by turning away from the ones with needs among us. God, with power made known in vulnerability, empower us and enable us to do something and to do it well. Amen. And so may you know and feel this day God's hope that has been born into the world, God's love that went into an ancient alleyway, became a refugee, and may we all remember that while keeping and coming into the world, God comes as light and as hope to show us a way. And so may we find the light, and may that light free us all, now and always. Amen.
Lost and weary traveler, searching for the way to go. Stranger, heavy-hearted, longing for someone to know. May you find light. May you find light. May you find light to guide you home. There are weary travelers searching everywhere you go. Strangers who are searching, longing deeply to be known. May you find a light. May you find a light. May you find a light to guide you home. To God.